Go ahead. Poke the Blair. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Pretty good music cities in the World Series. I mean, forget the whole journey thing in the Huey Lewis and the News being from San Francisco. Jefferson Airplane, I think, was from San Francisco, if I'm not mistaken. I guess Tony Bennett, yeah. I guess. Yeah, he's pretty good, Travis, because yeah, Tony Bennett guy's pretty good. I mean, he's no Michael Bublé. Anyhow, Shai Davidi is our MLB insider. You can follow him on Twitter, and his Twitter handle is Shai Davidi, which is one of the most original Twitter handles I've ever seen. He joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. How you doing, Mr. Davidi?
I'm all right. Nice and simple, straightforward Twitter handle. No need to search around.
No, it's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. Mine, you know, if I had my simple Twitter handle was taken, so I had to gussy it up a bit. Looking forward to the World Series?
Yeah, actually, it's a World Series that no one would have envisioned, and it's really entertaining. And I like the thought of a World Series between two teams whose playoff roster whose roster you probably wouldn't pick over any of the other playoff teams if you had to start the season over again.
No, it's true. I mean, if you ask most baseball fans, pick somebody off of either of these rosters to start your team, you know where Buster Posey and Sal Perez might be the two.
Right.
That might be where you start. Other than that, well, I mean, Greg Holland's pretty good.
Yeah.
But in terms of position players, you're right. Where else do you go after that?
Yeah, and, you know, it's two teams who have been remarkably good in close games, who've had a remarkable ability to get key hits and really out-bullpen their opponents. And it's going to be interesting to see who buckles.
Shai Davidi joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. I'm going to have an item up on the Sportsnet website at some point, my Monday column this week, and one of the things I look at is the bullpens in this series. And Shai, I'm wondering, if you look at the percentage of payroll that these teams have devoted to their bullpen, the Giants are, I believe, around 15%. Kansas City's a little higher than that. If you look at the average of teams that made the playoffs this year, they devoted roughly 15 to 16% of their payroll to the bullpen. The Toronto Blue Jays devoted 8% of their opening day payroll to the bullpen. Is there a message there for the Jays?
It's interesting because Alex Anthopoulos had focused the last few years on trying to get young, cheap, controllable relievers, right? You go back a few trade deadlines ago, and the whole impetus behind trying to get Delabar and trying to get Lincoln was to have a couple cheap, controllable arms. The thing that you realize is that the guys, to have someone who's reliable, those are the relievers that are worth paying for, and they're really few and far between, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have one of those guys and you're constantly looking in turnover year after year and inconsistencies in the bullpen, because, you know, for the most part, relievers tend to go up and down. But that to me is what makes a guy like Luke Gregerson really intriguing this year, because he's been pretty consistent in a relief role. He hasn't been a closer yet. And maybe he's somebody you can kind of plug in there. I mean, the Blue Jays have had Casey Jansen, who has been one of their most, you know, reliable guys over the past few years, but he's going to go to free agency right now. And the Blue Jays don't seem to be matching up with him in terms of asking price. So I don't think he's coming back. And if you don't have that one stable rock, you're going to constantly have these fluctuations. And you know, the Blue Jays have made a point of wanting to spend their payroll money elsewhere, and as a result, they've had to live with some ups and downs.
And it's interesting too, if you look at the San Francisco Giants bullpen in particular. This is their third World Series in 5 years. They've got four relievers who will have competed in all of those World Series. Now their roles have changed. Sergio Romo's no longer the starter, but Sergio Romo, Jeremy Affelt, I think Santiago Casilla's been there for 4 years, and there's somebody else as well who's been there for 4 years. That's pretty remarkable. That might suggest that maybe the whole idea that, well, you know, we can put a bullpen together somehow is not exactly an accurate idea.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. I was just kind of scouring different rosters the other day, and the Cubs have two young hard-throwing right-handers in Justin Grimm and Neil Ramirez in their bullpen, and they are going to let those guys focus on the bullpen as opposed to trying to stretch them out again and see whether they can start.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if that might be something teams start doing a bit more in terms of building a guy up through the minors as a reliever, as opposed to, you know, the mentality is like, let's let guys fail as starters and then we'll turn them into relievers after. Maybe you start grooming relievers and then you plug them into your big league roster, and then you can get 6 years of control, and they've lived the bullpen life, they've lived the ups and downs in terms of managing their arms and managing their pain. Because this playoff, more so perhaps than any other, it's just been so bullpen dominant, because you know, in large measure, all the great starters that we've seen haven't really, you know, for the most part, stolen the show or mm-hmm. you know, completely dominated games the way you might have expected. It's been the bullpens who've gotten done a lot of the heavy lifting, and I wonder if teams are going to see that and say, you know what, maybe we've got to model ourselves a little bit more, and we got to find ways to build bullpens and build them in an expense fashion, because a lot of bad money gets spent on relievers in free agency. There's no doubt about that. At the same time, you know, sometimes you get what you pay for, and if you don't put your money in the right guy, you're setting yourself up for constant turnover and constant struggle.
Shai Davidi joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. You can follow Shai Davidi on Twitter. His Twitter handle is @ShaiDavidi. You can follow him on Sportsnet. You can read his articles on Sportsnet at sportsnet.ca. What do you think happens in this World Series? I mean, I got to make a pick earlier or later today. I'm going to lean. I haven't picked Kansas City once, and I'm not going to do it now because to me that's cowardly. I'm going to stick with. I'm going to say San Francisco wins it in six.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really torn up. I thought if the Royals beat the A's, that they'd beat the Angels, and I thought the Orioles would spank them into the off season, and then
yeah.
that turned out not to be so accurate. I'm really torn up about this one. I think it's got a chance to go seven, and I'm going to pick the Giants just because they seem to have some magic to them that they're able to carry over. I mean, it's hard to pick against the Royals. You know, they really pull at your heart the way they've played. I just like the Giants.
Shai, you reported on Friday that Bob Stanley will not be back as bullpen coach. DeMarlo Hale, you also reported, is a candidate for the vacancy in Minnesota. DeMarlo, I think DeMarlo has interviewed at a couple of places in the past couple of years, if I'm not mistaken, including, frankly, he interviewed for the Blue Jays job when John Farrell got it as well, I believe. Are you surprised that Bob Stanley is gone? That would seem to open a spot for maybe somebody like a Rick Langford, or I mean, Dane Johnson's been their minor league pitching coordinator, and I don't know, maybe it opens a spot for Pat Henkin to come back if that were to transpire. But are you surprised that Bob would be the only coach that we know is definitely not coming back?
Well, I don't think it's fair to blame him for the bullpen's troubles or anything like that, but I think given how much Alex Anthopoulos has made a point of saying, you know, the bullpen really struggled and the bullpen in some ways cost us, that that is going to be where there was going to be some sort of change. Now, you know, Stanley wasn't necessarily supposed to be in that big league job. He took it over when Pat Hankin had to take care of his dad. I believe he's still in the process of taking care of his dad. So I don't think he's going to be a candidate. The three names that I've heard are, like you mentioned, Langford, Dane Johnson, as well as Randy St. Clair, who was the pitching coach at AAA Buffalo last year, and he's got some big league, or lots of big league time, former Expo.
Right.
So those are the candidates that I've heard, and I think any of those guys will make some sense because they have a lot of experience with the young pitchers in the Jays system that are either already up or going to be coming up. And I guess when you have the type of season in the bullpen that the Jays had, you look for just trying to change things up. If it's not only it's going to be in personnel, but maybe you change up the voice too and see if that gets you a bit of a different result. So I don't know that any of that is Bob Stanley's fault. I heard nothing but good things of him from the guys in the bullpen, but whenever you don't get results, changes get made. And so if he ends up being one of the fall guys for the season that happened.
Shai, how soon do you think Alex moves on Melky Cabrera? Because they've got to get a read on that right away, don't they?
I think they already have a read. I mean, okay. I think they've got a pretty good read, you know.
Let me rephrase that. How soon do they make him an offer, I guess, is the
Well, maybe that. That's a good question. They may have already made him an offer, or they may have already talked concepts and directions and expectations. And I think the Cabrera camp has nothing but incentive to wait until things really open up, because he's going to be one of the most coveted hitters on the market. He's definitely one of the best hitters on the market, and there is no reason for him to sign something now unless it's an overpay, and the Blue Jays aren't going to do that. So this isn't going to get resolved quickly unless once free agency period opens, some team comes and blows the Cabrera camp out of the water, which I don't expect to happen. I think this is going to drag out. And, you know, the Blue Jays may be in a position where it gets to the point that they have to start looking in a different direction, because they would surely have talked to him at some point in time before this. I mean, there's no confirmation of that, but, you know, logic says that they would have explored something at a certain point. And the Cabrera camp, quite rightly, is going to see itself as being in a position to score big. And they're going to want multiple teams involved. So I think this is a process that isn't going to play out quickly for the Blue Jays, and it may not end up coming out the way a lot of fans are hoping it will.
Shai, I appreciate you doing this morning. As always, thanks so much. We will we'll be in touch.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Take care. That is Shai Davidi. He is our MLB insider on Sportsnet. And again, his Twitter handle is at Shai Davidi. Although, if you're listening to the show, you're a smart baseball fan. If you're a smart baseball fan, you're already following him on Twitter. But just in case it somehow slipped through the cracks, his Twitter handle is at Shai Davidi, and he'll be keeping you up to date during the World Series and into this offseason, which will be a fairly interesting offseason for the Blue Jays. Some interesting player moves need to be made by this organization. I want to talk about bullpens. Tomorrow we'll get your picks and who's going to win the World Series. But I want to talk about bullpens. The takeaway from this World Series for me is all about bullpens. Yeah, I mean, every World Series team has a certain amount of magic. How do you quantify Lorenzo Cain's performance, Mike Moustakas' performance? I mean, there's just the stuff that happens during a World Series run. Travis Ishikawa, you try to explain that. Mike Matheny losing his mind, you try to explain that as well. I mean, there's always a certain amount of magic in each World Series as the matchups get formed. But what I find interesting about this World Series are the bullpens. I think the one thing this World Series may accomplish is it may get people to think differently about bullpens, people who are putting teams together. I mean, there's a couple of ways. Kansas City has got three guys that throw 100 miles an hour at the end of the bullpen. Guys they've drafted, guys they've nurtured. Talking about Greg Holland and you know, in the middle relievers, Kelvin Herrera, guys like that. Guys who they've got guys who throw hard at the end of the bullpen. San Francisco, a little different. San Francisco has gone to the World Series, or they've won the World Series with Brian Wilson as closer. They've won the World Series with Sergio Romo as closer. And this year, Santiago Casilla is the closer. But for the three World Series, the three different trips to the World Series they've made in 5 years, they've had four relievers who've been with them all the time. Casilla, Romo, Javier Lopez, Jeremy Affelt. Think about that. We've been surprised that Bruce Bochy is able to press all the right buttons. Well, hell, he should be. He's got the same buttons. I mean, he's looking at buttons that have worked for him in the World Series, for God's sake, before. So it's just a matter of hitting the right one and figuring out the right combination. But it's interesting because I made that point that if you look at, and again, I wish the column was up in Sportsnet.ca right now, because I make the point about the percentage that teams spend on their bullpen. The Jays are about 26th or 27th in baseball in bullpen spending, or were this year in bullpen spending 26th or 27th in Major League Baseball in terms of percentage devoted to bullpen. And I understand the numbers can be construed in a variety of different ways, right? Small market teams are obviously going to spend a higher percentage on their bullpen than big market teams. But when you look at what Alex Anthopoulos said about the Jays season, and when you look at the strength of these two particular teams, the Giants and the Royals, clearly the bullpen is important. And clearly you can't just kind of make it up as you go along. There's two ways of looking at this. The good young arms you've brought up in the case of Kansas City, or the guys you've put together and stuck with in the case of San Francisco. I mean, San Francisco's re-upped at least three of those relievers at least three times. They haven't thrown them out. They haven't taken the approach that, yeah, well, Jeremy Affelt's kind of a, you know, crap throwing lefty. Well, we'll find somebody else. We can find another guy who's going to kind of a thumber, as the guys call him. We can find another thumber. Well, they'd rather have the thumber that got a couple of World Series rings. So I'm wondering, and I'll ask you this right now. This World Series, the World Series is going to start tomorrow. We'll have the games on Sportsnet 590, the Fan of Sportsnet. Has that changed the way you've thought about the bullpen? Has that changed, or should it change, do you think, the way the Jays think about their bullpen? 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. Because you know what? We've fallen in love with hard-throwing starting pitchers in this game. Remember, I'm the guy telling you that the new currency in baseball is cost-effective young starting pitching. Or starting pitching in general. Starting pitching is important. You're only as good as your starting pitching. It's true, but you know what? You got to have a real good bullpen. And I'm pleading guilty here. I'm pleading guilty. I was one of those people the past couple of years who thought, oh, hell yeah, I can figure out a bullpen. I'll take a little bit of this and a little bit of that and find this guy and this six-year free agent, and we'll find this guy from over here, and this guy's coming off the DL. We'll put it all together. We'll shake it up, throw it out there, and bang, instant bullpen. And I've had to readjust my thinking. Rocky and Markham, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Good, man.
Good. Yes. I think the bullpen is a key ingredient, especially in the playoffs. Why I say so is because look at a team like the Detroit Tigers. They probably have the best starting pitching in baseball, and look what happened to their bullpen. They just kept on signing players like,
yep,
Jabba Chamberlain, Jim Johnson, et cetera, and they acquired Joaquin Soria. And look what that turned out to be. They ended it after the ALDS. Same thing with the Dodgers. They have a broken bullpen as well. They don't have legitimate legitimate bullpen pieces.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at San Francisco, they've been consistent with their bullpen over the last 4 years. If you think about this, Tim Lincecum was a big piece.
Yes.
With the two World Series they had. On top of that, if you look at St. Louis, when they won the World Series, I remember in 2006, Adam Wainwright was the key piece for the bullpen before mm-hmm. he converted into a starter. And then as for the Royals, I think that's their weapon right now. That's what they were relying heavily on because most of the games they play are low scoring runs. So I really believe that. And for the Jays, I really believe that they need to figure out what they need to do with their bullpen, because I know they relied heavily on Sergio Santos and Steve Delabar, and Brett Cecil was up and down throughout the year. So yeah. I really believe bullpen is there.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Rocky. Yeah, it's there are a couple of ways to put together a bullpen, as I've said, but I think the numbers suggest that you've got to devote more resources to your bullpen than the Blue Jays have devoted to their bullpen in recent years, certainly this year. I don't think you can take the approach that, well, we'll just kind of get by. And I don't know if this is, you know, if what we're seeing in this World Series is necessarily revolutionary. I mean, it seems to me that your best practices as a baseball manager, as a general manager, it's remarkable how they've kind of stayed the same throughout history. But I really think that the bullpen, this series has shown that the bullpen is more and more, has become more and more important. And maybe you've got to spend more money on your bullpen than in other aspects of your team. And when you talk about the Tigers' bullpen, Rocky made a good point here. When you talk about the Tigers' bullpen and how, you know, the Tigers just kind of, you know, they went out and collected guys. They paid for a lot of guys. They brought guys in like Soria. Actually, Rocky was in a different caller making the point. But they brought in guys like Soria and Chamberlain. You've got a relatively young new manager in Brad Ausmus, and now you've given him these pitchers. And you've got scouting reports on them, and they've all got track records. But the fact of the matter is, using your bullpen is very much a feel thing. There has to be an element, I think anyhow, an element of familiarity between the manager and the pitchers. And part of the problem with the Tigers is not only did they have arms that didn't perform well, they had a manager who was looking at a lot of these arms for the first time. You know, the thing, I remember Bruce Bochy talking about during the World Series in Detroit one day, people were asking him about his bullpen, and he made an interesting point. Mark Gardner's been his bullpen coach for a while. Dave Rigetti's his pitching coach. And Bruce's point was, numbers and everything aside, the three of us can sit there and watch a guy on the mound, and we know when he's losing it. We know when we have to make a move. Why do we do that? Because we've seen him with our own eyes for 3 years. We know what the red flags are for Sergio Roman. You don't get it right all the time. Sometimes you misread it. Sometimes you leave a guy in too late, he makes a pitch, a home run's given up, you go, God, we should have taken him out. But by and large, Bruce Bochy, Dave Rigetti, they're so used to seeing these guys. They know every little tick, every little quirk, every little sign, every little red flag that something's not quite right. That is a huge plus for a manager when he uses his bullpen. It's a huge plus to know, hey, we saw this. When did we see this? Last year? Last month? A couple of weeks ago. Let's get him out. I think that's a real strength to the San Francisco Giants. And maybe, like I said, maybe I'm guilty. Maybe a lot of other baseball people had reached that conclusion a while ago. But I kind of fell in love with, hey, let's focus on young starting pitching. And, boy, let's, you know, do that. And let's get a lineup together. And I was one of those people that kind of thought, hell, we'll figure out a bullpen. Give me some guy who throws right-handed. Give me some guy who's left-handed. Give me a sidearm. Or give me a guy with a little bit of funk in his delivery. All that stuff. We'll put it together. We'll be good to go. Maybe there's more... a more deliberate process to it than that. John in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Has this World Series got you looking at bullpens a little differently?
Oh, I look at it exactly the same as I used to. It's an important piece of your team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to remember that those teams, first of all, you made an excellent point, which now I'm going to go off tangent. Pat Henkin was the coach, and I have a great man crush for Pat Henkin. Last year, they had a great bullpen.
I got to tell you something. You and just about you and no, honest to God, you and just about everybody in baseball. And I've said it in this show, and I maintain it. Pat Henkin's going to manage.
Him, and he had the exact same, which makes him really smart. The exact same opinion as me about pitching, which is just get up there and chug in strikes. You just chuck it, and then sometimes guys get out because you have eight other guys out there with you. Okay, that's point number one. Point number two is both those teams also have great starters. It's not like they just have a bullpen. You know, Kansas City has that Gallardo kid who's awesome, and they have Big Game James, and San Francisco enough said. They got all their guys are good. And thirdly, that is I've been arguing with you about Sanchez this whole offseason or this whole season about why don't you just leave him where he is? You know, they need a guy that can shut games down.
Right.
He goes deep into games, then he loses it. You know, he's a 4-5 inning guy. There used to be this pitcher, I forget his name, Dave Righetti, who used to do the exact same thing.
Yeah, the problem, John, is I've been telling people that Sanchez should be a closer. And in point of fact, I've also said, John, that I think he is going to be the closer. Regardless of what happens in the offseason, here's what I think will happen, John. They'll bring a guy in. They'll bring a couple of guys in to close. And I do believe Aaron Sanchez will go into spring training as a starter, but Aaron Sanchez will be the closer. That's just from where I am right now, I think Aaron Sanchez will close. Now, Alex Anthopoulos has been pretty clear that he sees Aaron Sanchez as a starter. But he's also left open the caveat, well, let's wait and see what happens in the offseason. Let's wait and see. Maybe they find a taker for R.A. Dickey or Mark Burley. I don't know. Maybe they do. Maybe as part of their offseason maneuvering, they have to give up one of those starting pitchers you know, to make a couple of other things work, in which case, all right, then you have to look at it and go, okay, realistically, where's Aaron Sanchez going to serve you best? But I don't believe it's at all out of the question that Aaron Sanchez is in the closer. I still think the odds favor Aaron Sanchez closing for this team coming out of spring training. I don't know if that means Aaron Sanchez will be a closer forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. But I still think the odds favor him being a closer coming out of spring training. Again, though, let's wait and see what the offseason brings in terms of player moves. But I think people have been way too quick to dismiss that possibility. Tom in Waterloo, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good morning, Jeff.
Morning.
Remember the last time you won, what did we have? 8-9 was guaranteed, and we had young starters. Long and others. So, you know, has anything really changed?
Well, the thing is, though, we've always, in recent years, we've taken the approach that, and a lot of people have, that you can kind of piece a bullpen together statistically, you know, and as well as I do, the analytics types will tell you that, you know, bullpen, there's a lot of sudden regression on the part of guys. I mean, it really is a crapshoot, yada, yada. Well, it may be a crapshoot, but you know what? I'm beginning to think that maybe there are ways of mitigating the crapshoot potential of that.
Yeah. I remember in Camp 13, I mean, the pen was our weakness, right? and then we ended up with all-stars, and it was the positive of the team last year, or the year before.
Yeah.
And then just, you know, Delabar, Santos, you know, even Jensen and Cecil getting hurt this year. I mean, we just lost it this year.
There's very little you can do if a guy just loses it. There's very little you can do.
I mean, I see some of the young starters filling in this year, actually, and putting in some time, getting their feet wet in the league. I really do.
Well, Alex has made the point that even if Aaron Sanchez is in the rotation, it's a likelihood that he will see time in the bullpen just because there will be an issue with innings. And that would get to your point. There's some young arms coming up in this organization right now. They're not all going to be able to start in the majors. Some of them are going to be ready to pitch in the majors, but they're not going to be able to start in the majors. How do you use them? Well, maybe you do that. Maybe you do break them in the bullpen. I just think that there's going to be a lot more thought put into the Blue Jays bullpen this year than a lot of us may have anticipated. You know, we've been running around saying they're not bringing Morrow back. They're probably not going to bring McGowan back. You know that Jansen's gone. Santos isn't there. That's a hell of a lot of turnover in your bullpen. It's going to have to be an area of focus for Alex Anthopoulos. Obviously, you have to get another infielder. Whether that infielder plays third base or second base doesn't matter to me. I'll go with Brett Laurie at second. If I can get an improvement at third base, or if I can get a guy who makes my team, if I can get a bat that makes my team better on balance, and that bat can only play third base, I'll move Brett Laurie to second in a freaking heartbeat. I got to do that. I got to get one more impact bat in the infield. But I've also got to pay attention to the bullpen. The Kansas City Royals and the San Francisco Giants will start the World Series tomorrow night. When you're in Kansas City, those of you who are going there, the Negro League Museum in Kansas City is remarkable. I was lucky enough to get a tour of the place, I want to say like 8-10 years ago. Bob Kendrick is president of the Negro League Baseball Museum in Kansas City. And he's going to join us to talk about Kansas City getting ready for the World Series. We'll talk about the historical importance of Kansas City as a baseball city. This is the Jeff Blair Show, and this is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of the Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. And listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Excuse me, do you know the way to Kansas City? Excuse me, do you know the way to Kansas City? Excuse me, do you know the way to
Kansas City? We're back. Mike Tanier, national lead writer for Bleacher Report, NFL lead writer for Bleacher Report, will join us at 11 o'clock. We'll talk about Peyton Manning's. It was inevitable that he was going to set the record for touchdown passes. It's been inevitable for about a year and a half. Nonetheless, he accomplished it last night. And Mike Tanier will join us. Kevin Barker's Broncos, I guess we can call him, running roughshod over San Francisco. And we'll talk to Mike Tanier about that. And also the Seattle Seahawks struggles away from home. And trying to figure out if both the Seahawks and the 49ers are going to make the playoffs is going to be one of the interesting things to watch down the road. And Don Wakamatsu, one of our favorites, a bench coach for the Kansas City Royals, really enjoyed working with Don when he was here with the Toronto Blue Jays. He'll join us at 11:40. And we'll talk about the Royals' success ahead of tomorrow's World Series opener against the San Francisco Giants. I made this point before the break that if you're going to Kansas City to see any of the World Series games, if you're going to Kansas City for any reason, the Negro League Baseball Museum is an absolute must. I've been lucky enough to be there on a couple of occasions and to check it out. And it's, well, as I said, it's a must. You owe it to yourself to go to the museum. You owe it to yourself to, I mean, I found it a place to, and you run into these places every now and then on the road. I found it to be a place that lent itself to contemplation, to quiet contemplation would probably be the way I'd put it. It's a remarkable museum. And Kansas City itself has a remarkable history as a baseball town, you know, beyond the Royals. Amongst other things, it was, the Kansas City Monarchs were, the first professional team that Jackie Robinson played for. Of course, Jackie Robinson went on to break the color barrier with the Montreal Royals and then the Brooklyn Dodgers. Bob Kendrick is president of the Negro League Baseball Museum, and we're very pleased to be joined at this time by Bob Kendrick. Bob, thank you so much for doing this today. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Jeff, man, thanks for having me on the show.
This is, like, people are going to look at Kansas City. They're going to think of the Royals. They're going to think, boy, those teams, you know, the teams of the 80s. A couple older people maybe will say, hey, what about the Kansas City A's and, you know, the history there? But Kansas City has had a huge or played a huge role in the development of the Negro Leagues and ultimately the breaking of the color barrier, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and that's why we're so excited while the world is now taking a look at Kansas City and obviously the success of our young Kansas City Royals team. It has squarely put the focus on the heritage of the game and, of course, Kansas City's role in that heritage as the birthplace of the Negro Leagues, as home to one of the greatest baseball franchises, not in just Negro Leagues history, Jeff, but in baseball history. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about the great Kansas City Monarchs. They sent more guys to the major leagues than any other Negro League franchise, had only one losing season in their almost 40-year existence in the Negro Leagues. And I say this with no disrespect whatsoever. They're still the greatest baseball franchise to ever play in this city. You know, in spite of what we love our Kansas City Royals, but the Monarchs' legacy is tremendous. And all those great stars that came in, you touched upon one in Jackie Robinson, who is arguably this country's greatest hero in what he did in breaking down the walls of segregation and breaking the color barrier in Major League Baseball, and that jettisoned the modern-day civil rights movement in this country alongside opening the door for so many other black and Spanish-speaking athletes to fulfill their dream of playing in the major leagues. And so Kansas City has had a unique place in the history of our sport, in the heritage of our sport, and the world will get a glimpse of that over the next couple of days, and subsequently, if this thing goes seven games, you know, four games to be in the national spotlight is really, really something that we embrace and very excited about.
You know, I'm looking at, just called up the Monarchs website. I'm looking at some of the names here, you know, Satchel Paige, and I, you know, Ernie Banks, Elston Howard, you know, of course,
Willie Brown,
of course, Buck O'Neill, who
Hall of Famers. These are all Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
And of course, Buck O'Neill, who should be in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Hank Thompson, who would have been a Hall of Famer had not been some of the personal issues that derailed what was going to be a brilliant career. George Altman, who, of course, had a wonderful major league career. Sweet Lou Johnson. You know, these are guys who just played, you know, made it to the major leagues mm-hmm. from the Monarchs. We're not talking about Hilton Smith, Hall of Famer. Bullet Rogan, Hall of Famer. You know, the list goes on and on and on of great talent that played right here in Kansas City that really was the forerunner of this great baseball legacy. And this is a great baseball town, even though, you know, we've had a tremendous dry spell from the last time the Royals were in the World Series, 1985, mm-hmm. up until now. But the roots of baseball are deep in this city, and it's still a great baseball town, and thus all the excitement, you know, generated around this young Kansas City Royals team, who, Jeff, coincidentally play the game the way they played it in the Negro Leagues.
Mm-hmm.
They play a vintage Negro League style of play.
Mm-hmm. Bob Kendrick is president of the Negro League Baseball Museum in Kansas City. He joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. What made Kansas City such a focal point for the formation of Negro League teams? Was there a societal thing? Was it just, a matter? I know that I believe that, if I'm not mistaken, when the Royals were formed, they were actually formed kind of out of an army team, almost out of a barnstorming army team. Was it just the presence of an owner? How did that come about?
Yeah. Well, most of the members of the Kansas City Monarchs did come from that army team. And that army team had Bullet Rogan and several other great stars who would make up that early Kansas City Monarch team. You know, when Rube Foster formed the Negro Leagues here in Kansas City, it was the coming together of eight independent black baseball team owners. J.L. Wilkinson, one of those owners, owned the Kansas City Monarchs. And so the meeting took place here in Kansas City. They signed the document to start the Negro National League, the first successful organized black baseball league. And they started that with eight teams. And one of those eight teams was our own Kansas City Monarchs. And many of those who were part of that Monarchs came from Wilkie's team called the All Nations, which was really a kind of a homogenous group of athletes, both white, black, Hispanic, Asian American, Native American, who were playing on this team. So J.L. Wilkinson was the only white owner of the original eight Negro League franchises owning the Kansas City Monarchs. But J.L. Wilkinson was a 2,000 man in the 1900s. He was light years ahead of his time. He didn't see color. He just saw people. And the late, great Buck O'Neill, Jeff, would say that J.L. Wilkinson was the first white man he ever met who had absolutely no prejudice. Wilkie made his entire living in black baseball,
mm-hmm.
and he built one of the greatest baseball franchises in the history of our sport. And so his Monarchs, as the moniker would say, they were the talk of the town all over the world because it was such a great barnstorming team. They made their way.
I was going to say, why was he trusted so much by Rube Foster when the Negro Leagues were formed? What was it about? Was it simply his lack of? Was it simply his lack of prejudice? Was that simply the reason?
It really was because, honestly, Foster was resistant against any white ownership.
Mm-hmm.
But he kept hearing all these great things about this guy Wilkinson and what Wilkinson had done with creating the All Nations team, which became the Kansas City Monarch team. And then Wilkie also had access to stadiums, and Foster needed that.
Ah.
And so Foster would relent. Wilkinson would become the secretary of the Negro Leagues and, honestly, one of the greatest owners in baseball history, and nobody knows anything about it. He was rightfully inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame in 2006. He should have been in well before 06. He should have been in on the basis that he created night baseball. You know, they're playing night games in the Negro Leagues 5 years before they ever played a night game in the Major League.
That's right.
And it was J.L. Wilkinson who orchestrated this. But when you, again, you look at the success of his baseball club, and they beat everybody. You know, it wasn't just like they were just beating up on teams in the Negro League. They beat everybody, the town teams, Major League teams. It didn't matter. Wilkie didn't discriminate on who he beat. They beat everybody.
he was an equal opportunity defeater. Hey, Bob, listen, it was great of you to join us today. Again, anybody going to the World Series, I know there are folks from here who are going to go down to watch the World Series. You've got to go to the Negro League Baseball Museum. It's the story of J.L. Wilkinson is just one of the many, many, many stories that are told at that museum. Bob, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and have a lot of fun this week. And I really do hope, I hope you need that extra security for all the folks that are coming through there.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jeff, we appreciate the opportunity and the support, and we're looking forward to a great week. And good luck to our great Kansas City Monarchs team. What a fun team to watch. And so we're all excited here.
You be well, Bob. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
That is Bob Kendrick. He's president of the Negro League Baseball Museum. And again, just go online, do some reading on the Kansas City Monarchs. If you're not going to be able to make it to Kansas City, but if you are going down there for the World Series, it is, I go to a lot of museums and stuff like that. It's right up there. I would put it right up there next to Cooperstown. And in some ways, it's a little more accessible even than Cooperstown. Appreciate Bob Kendrick joining us. Mike Tanyers, the NFL national lead writer for Bleacher Report. We're going to talk about that Peyton Manning guy. Apparently, he did something last night. Time to talk a little NFL on the Jeff Blair Show right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.